talk New York sports here. The Fan.
All right, thank you, Marco. See you in an hour. 888-808-1019. Mick Monagle here with you on The Fan. On the live chat on, I keep saying the live chat. On the YouTube channel, you can check us out.
Live stream.
Live stream. Live stream. Right on YouTube.
Three dummies.
Three dummies. Yeah,
and that is a joke that only the viewing audience will understand.
That's right. So you wouldn't even know what that means unless you're watching on YouTube. So because I'm incredibly lazy, and I got to get like a refresher. I haven't brought in my laptop. When I have the laptop with me, I'm going to be able to go to a screen that says commercial break in progress so that I don't have to be filmed every second while I'm in here, while I'm sipping something or I'm scratching my face, like, you know, because people are crazy and they'll, that's right, scratching my face. I just don't want to necessarily be on camera every second of this thing. I want to be able to have breaks without having to get up and walk out. So eventually I'm going to get the laptop and learn how to do that and make the switch during the breaks. But for now, I wheeled in the old Craig Carton dummy. I don't know if you guys remember from our time with the Carton and Roberts show. We had a lot of fun with this guy right here. I don't want to move him too much because he'll topple over. But so I put a piece of paper on the dummy's chest that says break in progress, and I wheel him in and sit him in instead of me on camera during the break so that everybody can see that we're in commercial break. Thank you, dummy. And, of course, my only concern was is I wasn't sure the station could handle two dummies with pieces of paper on their chest. But I guess there's room for Loogie and the commercial break dummy. I guess we can fit them both in. But I was concerned about that because there's already one dummy with a piece of paper on his chest with start dart, which is obviously a mistake. Obviously a mistake. Should I do this? No. Okay. I don't even see the football one. Do I still have to do that? Not this time of night, right? Bump, ba, da, 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 da. Well, now I feel like I've got to read you something. So let me tell you about the city's biggest indoor pickleball event. It's coming back October 10th and 11th, and it will sell out. Sign up for the fun or for the cash prizes. Go to 1010wins.com/pickleball for all of the info. The pickleball tournament is presented by Nissan. At Nissan, we make cars that thrill. Experience the thrill for yourself today. Shop NissanUSA.com, and I can tell you, Nissans do thrill. I've had nothing but Nissans for like the last 15 years. You want to talk about comfortability? That is where I get, I don't care. When the lease is up, I go back to Nissan. It's very simple. I don't even think. Not a big car guy, don't care. One time I almost got a Dodge Challenger, the Challenger, which you can imagine was probably a challenge for me to get in every in and out of every day. But I always wanted one of those, but I decided not to do it, and I went back to Nissan. So I've had nothing but like Altimas and Rogues my whole driving life, pretty much. My first car ever was a Honda Prelude, which was a little guy. Another was a little white Honda Prelude. When the lights would come on, it would, the lights would like open up like eyelids on the front of the car, and then they would go down. They would go in and out. Up and down the lights, bang that bad boy up. And then I got an Oldsmobile Aurora, which the guy who sold it to me told me it was the Cadillac of old mobiles. It really was. Now we have these screens that literally do everything, the navigation on it, these big, screens that tell you, have all the information and music and all that. But like when I first started driving, they didn't have any of that stuff. And it just had right there, like it was the coolest thing, the Oldsmobile Aurora. It had like a little screen. Little tiny little thing, almost like a beeper kind of screen. Very small, little narrow, little green screen that would say good morning or good day or whatever it was when you would start the car. And then it would give you like little things that you can scroll through, either oil life or gas miles left or whatever. Like there were a couple of different messages that you could have on that little screen. I thought that was the coolest thing ever. Driving around at 19 years old with a little screen that the car that says good morning when you start it. I was like, I'm the coolest guy around in my Oldsmobile Aurora. Love that car. I forgot what happened to that car. I think I just junked it. I don't think I got into an accident with that one. Only the Only the prelude. She came and went. 888-808-1019. All right, let's get back to your calls. A little bit on still doing football, Giants, Jets. We'll get to the Mets, obviously, as a disappointing loss for the Mets last night. Nolan McLean officially becomes one of the great Met pitchers of all time. He joins that echelon of pitchers by having another great start and losing 1-0. That is DeGrom. He is right there, baby. 5 starts in, and he's become a Mets ace, losing 1-0 to the Phillies. As the offense has gone cold, and again, we've talked about this a lot. Yes, the pitching has been in shambles. Yes, you're not sure who you're going to start in a 3-game series. Now it's going to be a wild card series because the division is over. And you're not sure who those 3 starters are going to be. And, I'm thinking it's 2 rookies and Peterson. I don't know. We'll find out how the rest of it goes. But the reason this division's over, the reason the New York Mets do not have 7 to 10 more wins, the reason why this season has gone the way it's gone since Father's Day against the Tampa Bay Rays is because the offense is not nearly as good as it should be. Bottom line, I've been saying that forever. The last month, it's been a different story. The offense has been really good. Runners in scoring position, the whole bit. But they've gone cold again. They lost this game clearly because they can't score runs. They make mistakes. They have, they've made, I know the Yankees own blunders right now. I get it. But you got Beatty getting picked off. Saturday, you've got Lindor stealing third base. Like, they've made mental mistakes. They've made defensive mistakes. But ultimately, they haven't pitched well, obviously, but ultimately, this team would be in a far better position. This division would still be up for grabs. They would be much closer to at least the top wild card where you could possibly think about playing 3 games at Citi Field if this offense was what it was supposed to be all year. It just isn't. And Mullins is terrible. We'll get through all that. I'm going to get into the lineup and what it should be because, I think there's a definitive. We know what this team should be. We know what this team should be right now. To me, without question, Marte is your DH. Vientos is your third baseman. Beatty is your second baseman. Jeff McNeil is your center fielder. That's it. It's not a great defensive team, but that's your best lineup. And you need to score. Forget Mullins. He's been terrible since the trade. Terrible. Miserable at bats. Unable to get hits in any clutch situation. The second inning of this game, he has a terrible at bat. To me, it is done. It's done. Vientos at third. Beatty at second. Jeff McNeil in center. That is the team. We all know the other spots. I don't have to tell you the other spots. The other spots are locked in and loaded. You know who they are. You got Nimmo in left, Soto in right. Obviously, Lindor at shortstop. You got Pete at first. You got Alvarez as your catcher. We know the rest of the team. But the question marks and what they've been mixing around, Vientos at third, Beatty at second, Jeff McNeil in center. Jeff McNeil Jeff McNeil had a terrible at bat. Let's be fair. I've praised Jeff McNeil this entire season, I've been all over Jeff McNeil the last couple years. I've had to eat crow on Jeff McNeil. He's had a really good season. He's had a far more productive season than I thought he would. I'm just declaring him the everyday center fielder. I never thought I would have said that in any way, shape, or form. But here we are, and I am. But Jeff McNeil, Mr. Contact, Jeff McNeil, the guy who always puts the ball in play, Jeff McNeil who doesn't strike out, Jeff McNeil, the batting champion, comes up yesterday with second and third in the ninth after Vientos rips a double down the right field line. And unfortunately, Mauricio, the pinch runner, gets a terrible read on it. That ninth inning is frustrating. That entire ninth inning, Pete leads off with a base hit. They pinch run for Pete with, Mauricio. They pinch run with Mauricio, who isn't that fast and isn't that good of a base runner, but obviously he's faster than Pete Alonso. They don't have other guys available to pinch run, so they pinch run Mauricio. Vientos, after one out, Vientos hits a double down the line. Mauricio gets a terrible read on it. I'm not sure he scores anyway with his speed. And with only one out, I would imagine he probably gets the stop sign at third base with Jeff McNeil coming up, unless they really think he's going to score. If it's even going to be a play at the plate, they'll probably be prudent and hold him at third base. But he gets a bad read off the bat on a ball that absolutely is going into the corner. He can only get to third. Second and third, one out. Jeff McNeil, the guy you would want up there to put the ball in play, ends up swinging through a 102-mile-an-hour fastball at the top of the zone. And then Alvarez has what can only be described as a worse than Anthony Volpe at bat. And that's tough. That's real tough. And we'll get to Anthony Volpe later in the show, too, because not only is his play not enough, we got to make fun of him when he's off the field. We'll get to that in a second. But Jeff McNeil swings through a 102-mile-an-hour fastball, and then Alvarez swings at three slider knuckle curves, whatever it is Duran throws, that are 6 to 8 inches off the plate. He just went up there and said, I'm hoping he throws me a fastball, and I'm just going to swing at everything and hope I get a fastball. It was an atrocious at-bat. That was one of the worst non-competitive at-bats I've ever seen. He went up there and just swung at anything. Duran could have thrown the ball in the other dugout. At least if he did that, the swing and miss, it would have been a drop third strike and he could have got to first. Like, he would have swung at it. He was in swing mode. That was a terrible at-bat. And I know he's a tough son of a gun. He's dealing with a broken pinky, a torn thumb muscle, whatever. Like, he's the idea he's playing, I'll give him a lot of credit. As the backup catcher, Terenz, is dealing with a forearm issue. And McGill apparently is getting shut down too, so you can forget that as an option for the rotation, or at least in the bullpen. But those two at-bats with runners at second and third to tie the game at one were just awful at-bats. Awful at-bats, and particularly Alvarez was really just an embarrassing at-bat. The effort given in that at-bat was atrocious. And this offense, yet again, I'm sorry. I know it's been good for a month. I know, oh, this is a down year for Juan Soto. I get it. He's been incredible. I get it. But Nola, although being a top name and a pitcher who's had a track record and a good career, is having a miserable season. A miserable season. He's got an ERA upwards of 7, close to 7. He is one of, if not the worst pitcher in the National League this year. And they completely got shut down, completely, swinging at everything. There were a bunch of bad at-bats in this game. Like, this offense just has not been good enough. And right now you got the rotation, which is starting to come together because of these young kids. And, you know, Sproat over the weekend on Sunday pitched really well. But they've lost that game. They've lost 3 in a row. And if you don't look now, the San Francisco Giants are right behind them. Now, they do have the tiebreaker over the Giants after sweeping them and then losing 2 out of 3. So they've owned 4-2. The tiebreaker over the Giants, so the Giants are technically 4 games behind the Mets. But, like, I expect them in the postseason, but they are closer to being out than they are winning this division. They're closer to being out than playing 3 home games in the wild card game. They are closer to being out than they should be. And right now, like, this team and that lineup and this rotation and that back end of the bullpen, I suppose that's the one thing good thing about the game is that Helsley pitched well, throwing pretty much nothing but his slider. I think he threw 1 fastball in the entire inning. He had Bader all confused. Bader had a miserable at bat against them, but he had a really good inning. That's one positive for the Mets. But outside of Diaz, the bullpen scares me. Outside of really McClain, the rotation scares me. And right now, the offense continues to prove that they are not as good as they should be. And they go through funks where the entire team gets cold. The Yankees and Mets are similar in that manner, where it feels like when they're hot, they're all hot, and when they're cold, they're all cold. And we'll get to the Yankees as they start a big series against Detroit halfway through the gauntlet of those 12 games, and they are 4-2 in the first 6, and they just took down the fraud Blue Jays. And my only problem is they were at a charity event instead of sitting at home and being prepared for Detroit. Can you believe this team? They got the manager out in North Carolina seeing football games before the Houston series, and then before a very big, important Detroit series, they're out yucking it up in tuxedos at charity events. They've got some nerve. They should be home poring over information about the pitching rotation of the Detroit Tigers. They shouldn't be out doing the Lord's work, helping people. Getting all gussied up in tuxedos, showing off their wives and girlfriends. They should be locked in their bedrooms, going over scouting reports. Unbelievable, the Yankees. Unbelievable. They've got some nerve. What, they don't care about this Detroit series? They care more about their foundations and helping young kids? Shame on them. Shame on those Yankees. Going to North Carolina games to be with their children on the one-off day that they have in the month. Instead of being with their team. Now, doesn't matter they played well in that series and won 2 out of 3. I don't care. The manager's going to football games to watch his children coach. Unbelievable. And then, you know, they have to schedule this. They have to schedule this charity event, the Rodon Foundation. They have to schedule it right before a big Detroit series in September. June's not good enough. God knows they never played well in June. You could schedule it for June. They got some nerve trying to help children instead of being locked in their room focusing on scouting reports, going over how to get Gleyber Torres out. That's what they should be doing. Instead of sipping Cosmos and tuxedos, raising money for young kids. Unbelievable. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Steven in Mayopac. What's up, Steve?
Hey, they described it on the radio. Didn't Jeff McNeil just hit one foul off the over the bag? Or because I was listening to that last.
He did. Well, he hit one foul and it actually hit the umpire.
Oh,
he hit one foul and it hit the first base umpire in the foot. No, it was clearly foul.
Okay, clearly foul.
At least again, I was watching the football game. I was watching the Mets. I had volume on both, once I saw it was clearly foul, I didn't focus in. So I don't know if the broadcast harped on it, but it was clearly foul. It hit the umpire in foul territory.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was listening on radio. Oh, two questions for the Giants. You were getting me thinking when saying how the Jets losing on a 60-yard field goal. Is it longer ago than I think? Didn't the Giants have a bunch of early season losses with late upper 50-yard to 60-yard field goals?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're talking years ago.
It feels like 2 years ago, but
no.
It's probably longer.
Yeah,
right?
No. Jake Elliott. I think it was like Jake Elliott's rookie season. That was like the first kick he ever made. Was a long field goal kick to beat the Giants.
Yep.
Then it was Graham Gano when he was with the Panthers. The Giants had an unbelievable comeback, but I mean, you're talking about the days of Eli Manning and Odell Beckham Jr.
Okay.
I mean, that's how long ago it was.
Problem. That's the thing. The last like 5, 6, 7 years have gone so much faster than whatever.
Well, because the seasons have only lasted really 5 weeks. The Giants have only had 5 week seasons over the last 10 years. So it's obviously going to go very fast because then you stop paying attention to it, and we all become Mark out in California focused on our fantasy football teams because the Giants don't give us anything to give a damn about after Halloween.
Yeah, except for 2020 when the 6-10 year made us happy about early December.
Yeah.
Is that 2020? Oh, so my last question is, it's going to sound so nonspecific, but since you said, and you're right, that they've drafted and drafted and drafted at the line of scrimmage both ways, since it looks like on offense that they're playing against 20 defenders, and since it looks like on defense that the opposing offense could do anything they want, and it's wide open. And is it scheme, design? Is it, does you have to go back? You remember how you'd hear 7 or 8 years ago, oh, football's moved past the running game. Running game just isn't necessary. Is it possible
I think
the
that's
Giants
a bit
get a
strong.
Fullback?
A throwback what?
Have a fullback in there and just kind of, are they too complicated?
No, I think what you said has a vein of truth in it, and I think that's far. Now, the fullback position, yes, has gone the way of the dodo. And I like that expression. Someone got on me for using that expression on the show. I think it was Rami. I still like the way of the dodo, and I'm going to stick with it. Yes, the fullback has gone the way of the dodo. The fullback doesn't exist pretty much. There's like two in the NFL. But the idea of the importance of the run game hasn't diminished outside of the importance of the running back. I mean, those are two separate things. The run game's important. The running back and paying him money in a league where most, outside of Derrick Henry, feel like start to trend in the wrong direction at 25, 26. The running back doesn't, they don't want to pay running backs. They believe them to be kind of a dime a dozen. You can draft one in the fourth round, find a young kid who's a good running back. Like, the running back itself has become diminished, but the run game certainly hasn't. No, I mean, I think the run game is as important. Now, we know the passing game and the quarterback has elevated, but, you know, you got to run the football. Now, with a fullback, that sort of run scheme has kind of vanished from the NFL for the most part. But I don't believe that the run game is something. It's important. The Yankees, as we were talking about the Yankees, and I see the next caller wants to talk about the Yankees. But the Giants have to establish the run game. There's no doubt about it. That's part of it. Like, Russell Wilson's not going to go out there and throw for 400 yards. You need to establish the run. So, I mean, I'm up. You want to put a fullback back there? Do that. I don't care. Do something. They need to establish the run. They have two really good young running backs. I like both of them. We saw Scadaboo make an incredible pick up a blitz and just, like, he's ready to play. And Tracy's good. Like, they should be able to, as far as the backs go, like, if they could block it up and find some holes, I think they got running backs who can make it work. Establish the run. That's the first thing they need to do against the Dallas Cowboys. So I don't agree with you that the run game's been diminished. The passing game has obviously become more important and more effective with all the rules that have been instituted in the NFL. It's harder to defend the pass than it used to be. You can't touch a wide receiver. It's just become much easier. And we are seeing right now a generation of just unbelievable quarterback talent. I mean, we are in the golden age. I know many people are going to, they're going to talk about how the rules I just talked about are different. Oh, John Elway in this game, Dan Marino in this era would do this, Joe Montana would do this. Listen, that was a golden age of quarterbacks too. But right now, when you think of all the, you got Mahomes, you got Burrow, you've got Lamar, you've got Allen, I think Herbert could become part of that if he, you know, starts to play with Harbaugh enough, and week one he looked like that. Like, there are some really incredibly talented quarterbacks in this league right now. So the passing game has become, you know, over the last 15 years or so, really more important and, you know, what you need. But the run game hasn't been diminished, just the running back. And yes, the fullback no longer part of football for the most part. 888-808-1019. Quick break. We'll get to the Mets as well. We'll get to some baseball. I'm already getting a couple tweets. Everybody gets it, but they're predicting people won't. Just so you're aware, I was being sarcastic about the Yankees going to do charity. Like, of course. That's what off days are for. I hope they had a wonderful evening. Get your mind off baseball for a day. Go enjoy yourself. Go have a party. Go take care of the Rodon Foundation. Good for him. Absolutely. I'm being sarcastic because people got on Aaron Boone. And the other thing coming out of it is people, of course, like Anthony Volpe, we'll talk about this. Anthony Volpe's taken flack already for more reasons that he doesn't deserve. He's gotten plenty of reasons to make fun of Anthony Volpe. The idea that, you know, we got to compare him to Derek Jeter off the field, and we got to, you know, talk about his girlfriend's going to leave him when he has to play for the Colorado Rockies. And what, like, it's just, now I know it's a handful of people on social media, but it's unbelievable, man. The kid can't catch a break. He's there at a charity event with his girlfriend, and like, he becomes the story coming out of that because nobody thinks he deserves a life outside of baseball. Like, it's just unbelievable. He just shouldn't be the starter anymore.
Talk sports hands-free. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Count on Sundays all season long with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus.
Get out of here, dummy. What's going on? Nick Monagle here with you on The Fan. You would get that if you were watching on the stream, the live stream on YouTube right now. I got a dummy sitting in during the breaks to keep everybody entertained. He's my fluffer.
It's 3:36 a.m. You could say that.
Fluffer is a fine word. You could say that at any time. My fluffer.
If you don't know, don't Google it.
Don't Google it. Don't Google it. You don't want to know. 888-808-1019. All right, let's get to the calls. I've yapped on enough. Let's go to Bob in Vero Beach, Florida. What's up, Bob?
I don't think you want that on your resume.
No, well, I'm not the fluffer.
So,
the dummy's my fluffer. Everyone could use a fluffer.
That Alvarez at bat. Yeah. I'm a Yankee fan since 1958, okay? That causes me to get off my couch and use WTF. That was the least competitive thing I've ever seen since 50 Cent threw his first pitch out.
Yeah, okay. I have to admit, I've seen some feeble at bats. Recently, as a Yankee fan, you'll know, recently Anthony Volpe has given us a handful. That was, he just went up there saying, I'm going to swing at everything and hope it's a fastball.
It's like they got a drunk guy out of the stands and say, here, take the bat, swing.
Every single pitch was 5-6 inches off the plate. It was embarrassing.
I think it was more than that, Chris.
Yeah,
I mean,
it might have been. No, it was.
Could you imagine what the pitcher was thinking? He says, "Well, if he swung at this, let's see if he swings at this."
Of course,
and
no doubt.
And then let's see if he'll swing at this.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I don't think that pitch is on a pitch com, is it?
No, you're right. Durant just said, "Okay, let me see how far," and it felt like it wouldn't have mattered. Like it wouldn't have mattered how far outside the pitch was. He was swinging at it.
It was in the other batter's box.
Yeah,
I couldn't believe it.
Unbelievable. Terrible.
Pathetic. Anyway, who would have played first if Alonzo was out of the game?
He was out of the game. He got pinch run for.
That's what I'm saying.
If they would have tied the game, who would have come in to play first base?
Correct.
They might have played Vientos at first. They might have McNeil's played some first base. A couple times this year. I mean, they would have figured it out. Yeah,
you're right. Now that I think about it, Vientos has been there before. I was trying to...
Or Jeff. Yeah, you could have lost the DH and put Young there. Like, they had some options.
Oh, okay.
You got to score that run, though, so I have no problem with that. You got to score the run, then you worry about it.
It's just a shame to waste that pitching effort, you know, 1-0. Oh. You got to win those games, you know? Yep.
No, of course. We have seen that with the Mets for a long time. That was a... You know, that felt like a very Jacob DeGrom kind of start, where he has this incredible start. He gives up a run in the second inning and then completely shuts them down. He has given them 5 excellent starts to begin his Met career, and that was his first loss, and that's the first time it felt like, hey, welcome to the Mets. You pitch a one-run game, and you don't get any run support. Congratulations. You're here. You've made it.
I just look at Alvarez and say, do you recall where you were a few weeks ago?
Not only just a few weeks ago, a few days ago with his injury. I mean, I know it wasn't, he wasn't sent down for the same reason as he was a few weeks ago, but he was dealing with an injury. He was just in AAA having at bats. So, I mean, look, I don't know what happened with that at bat. When he first came back from that stint in the minors, he got hot. He's cooled off a little bit. He's just not been the offensive player that we all expected him to be after his rookie season. And he's had moments in time, but it just hasn't been consistent enough. But that particular at-bat with second and third, 2 outs to end the game, was an atrocious at-bat. Now, earlier in the game, was it Sosa? Like, he got into a little bit of a kerfuffle with a little bit of a brouhaha with Sosa at the plate over for no reason. I have no idea what the Phillies are doing. The Phillies have had a couple things, right? The last Boehm had a problem with the lighting out in the city field. The parabolic mic was causing some glare. And now Sosa has a problem with getting softly tagged on a strike 3 call in the dirt. Like, that, he's got to tag you, buddy. At any moment, you could break for first base. The idea that, I mean, geez, the Phillies are so, I'll tell you, I don't know. The Phillies are soft. Now, and the Mets have played very well against them despite last night. I would be hoping to see the Phillies in the postseason if I'm the Mets. I really would. I would be hoping to see the Phillies. They don't have their ace anymore. We'll see if Turner comes back. He's got a hamstring injury. Boehm's on the IL. They do think Turner could be back for the postseason, but like, I know they've got some dangerous hitters. I know right now you're talking about an MVP caliber season. for what's his name? Jeez, I'm losing it. Harper has obviously had his moments in the postseason where he's been dominant. He's had some moments where he's not been that good. But that's a team right now, even though they won this game and they're going to win this division. The division's over. I don't trust Philadelphia as far as I can throw them. They blew a 3-1 lead, a 3-2 lead heading home for 6-7 against the Diamondbacks a few years ago in the NLCS. They got beat in the NLDS by the Mets last year with the best record had the best record in the National League most of the year. And then, you know, right now, I don't think they're all that good. The pitching isn't the same without Wheeler. We'll see. But that was a disappointing loss for the Mets last night. Paul in Buffalo. What's up, Paul?
Oh, Chris. And before I get to my phone call, I'd like everyone to know this call is brought to you by the Human Fund. It's yes. People helping people.
It's people helping people. What's going on?
Anyway, Chris.
People helping people. I love it.
Before we get to the Yankee hot stove, it's curious with baseball teams. A month ago, the Mets are hitting the cover off the ball, and they cannot close a game out at all. Mm-hmm. Now they're getting these brilliant pitching performances from these young studs, and they can't hit anything. They better figure, like you said, they better figure it out quick because the Giants are coming and, you know, another week of bad baseball, and they could be looking at being in a virtual tie with the Giants. So
I mean, they do have the tiebreaker over the Giants, so it's really the Giants would have to beat them by a game. I'm not overly concerned about that, but you're not wrong. I mean, they've got to figure out a way to play a hell of a lot better than they've played the last 3 days. There's no doubt. Three games. There's
but
no doubt.
And in the other league, and let me say this, can we all just say that the National League is certainly no better than the American League this year?
I think that narrative needs to be put to bed, too. I wouldn't say no better. I don't know if that's, as much as I'm dogging on the Phillies, the Brewers have been the best team in baseball. I don't know how much faith I have in them in the postseason, but I would say the Brewers, Cubs, Dodgers, Padres, Phillies.
Dodgers are flawed this year.
Maybe given their
pedigree, they will pick it up in October.
Yeah.
But they have lost.
No, the Yankees are half they're 3-7 in their last 10. They blew a game where they were throwing a no-hitter and had a 3-0 lead with 2 outs in the 9th to the Orioles. They are absolutely flawed. There is no doubt about it. And the Yankees actually have a half a game better record. I'm just telling you, they're flawed, but so are the Houston Astros, so are the Detroit Tigers, so are the Toronto Blue Jays, so are the New York Yankees. Like, I would just have to say, I don't think it's as pronounced as people will tell you. Like, there are people who go, well, the 5 best teams in the National League, and maybe the Yankees and Blue Jays can be in the mix. I don't know if I, having watched the full season, I don't know if I would go that far.
I still would say
the National League, the top. I think the playoff teams overall in the National League, I think you can make a strong argument that they are better than the playoff teams in the American League. I think that's fair, but I don't think it's as pronounced as people would have you believe.
Yeah, that's fair. Let me say this, though, with the Yankees. How about the last 3 starts of Max Fried? He's gone 7 innings.
Yep.
When was the last time we've seen that? No, maybe Fried in the beginning of the season, but it is so refreshing.
And it was close that he wasn't going to be able to do it. I mean, in this last one against, I was kind of annoyed with him through 3 innings to give that 3-run lead back, but then he settled in. He got through 7. Let's be honest, even Luis Gil to go 6 innings against the Blue Jays. I'll take 6.
Yes.
I'll take 6.
Who is your third starter right now?
I think it's a very interesting question. I think it's a very interesting question. If it's a, like, especially, let's just go on the idea that they're going to be in the wild card. So, we'll see there. What are they up on? Boston, 2 games in the loss column, 2 games in the loss. They're 2 games up.
They're only 1 game back at Detroit. They're still, 3 on Toronto,
they're 2 in the loss column back on Toronto. They're 2 up on the loss column in Boston. They are only 1 game back in the loss column. Now, again, they have wins, so it's not 1 game, but I go with the loss column.
Yeah.
So they're 1 game in the loss column behind Detroit, but let's just assume the wild card for now, because that's where they sit.
Sure.
And right now they are 2 games in the loss column up on Boston. So let's assume it's at Yankee Stadium against the Boston Red Sox, right? That's right now season ends. Right now the season ends
juicy.
Today. That's the playoff matchup. I don't think there's any doubt who the first 2 are. The 3 are interesting. And I would say this. I was thinking about this actually driving in today. If it's on the, like, it's really interesting because Will Warren has been really good at Yankee Stadium,
Yeah.
And I trust Will Warren to throw strikes. Like, I don't know. He's not as dynamic as Cam Schlittler. He doesn't have the same stuff as Luis Gil. If you told me one of them, like, of those three, one of them was going to go out there and throw seven scoreless, my least prediction would be that's Will Warren. I would say either Schlittler or Luis Gil would be the one to go seven and give up only one or no runs.
But don't you want to see 102?
I know, but if you
told if you
told me one of them is guaranteed to give me five of one or two runs, I would
trust Warren.
That's
yeah.
Warren. Like, I don't. Luis Gil doesn't know where it's going. Almost on every other start,
I agree. He makes me nervous.
And Cam Schlittler just—he's a rookie. He's just getting his feet wet. I know Will Warren's a rookie, but he's pitched all year.
That's who I want to see, though.
It's on the road, Will Warren's out of the equation. If it's at home, it might be Will Warren. I've been thinking about it. I don't know. I understand your point. And by if I'm looking for dominant starting pitching, I'm going with one of the two of them. But if I'm just looking to have a pitcher give me the keep me in the game, especially at home, the way Will Warren is throwing at home, it might be Will Warren as my third starter. I don't know. It's a very interesting question.
Are you ready for whatever deranged call Brett's going to make today about Daniel Jones?
Well, I mean, listen, it's not going to be deranged. He's got a very strong argument. No, I know. He is going to be unhinged. I don't know when it's coming. Thank you for the call, Paul. Either today, tomorrow. He typically doesn't call on Monday. So it's not like he's waiting or he's ducking it. Not that he's ducking it, but like he typically doesn't call on Monday. But I know what's coming. And look, I will tell you about Daniel Jones. I can't go too far back at him. Daniel Jones played an incredible football game. Daniel Jones scored on every possession. He threw one touchdown pass, ran for two. They won in a blowout. It was the biggest rout of the game of the week. I'm pretty sure it was. At least it felt that way. It was whatever the final score was. It was 22-0, and the Dolphins were terrible. And I will say this: the Dolphins' secondary and defense overall are atrocious. They are a disaster. They are a sinking ship. He's getting fired. Tua is not going to be the quarterback much longer. Like I was confident in them. I thought they were going to come out and play well. At least while Tua is healthy, I thought the offense could score some points. They were atrocious. So I don't know what's going on with Miami. And I do put some of it on. He was playing the Miami Dolphins, who are falling apart at the moment. But I can't argue with how well he played. So we'll see. But I do not think that is. And again, we also got to admit, like, I never thought Daniel Jones was incapable of playing a good game. I know this happens to be a crazy good game where he scores on every possession. But he won a road playoff game playing incredibly well against Minnesota. I say that every time I get on Daniel Jones, I will say I will never take that away from him. That game wasn't about the defense. That game wasn't about Saquon Barkley. That was Daniel Jones winning a road playoff game for the New York Giants. There is no doubt that was Daniel Jones. Saquon Barkley and the defense were why they got to that game, but Daniel Jones won that football game playing an incredible game. We saw that I mentioned the second half against the Arizona Cardinals a couple years ago in week two of the season when they were about to go 0-2. They got blown out off of the playoff game. That next year, 40-0 against the Cowboys week one. Week two, they're losing to the lousy Arizona Cardinals. And then he has an incredible second half. He hit everything. He was perfect in that second half of the Cardinals game. He played really well against the Colts down the stretch of the year they went to the playoffs. He's had games. He's not incapable of playing a good football game. I would have never have said he'll never play another good football game the rest of his career. But over the course of the season, I think this is going to be the exception, not the rule for Daniel Jones. But today is absolutely, for all the people who want to say it was never about Daniel Jones, it's about the offensive line. Daniel Jones is going to be great once he gets out of New York. All of those people have every right to crow on this Tuesday this week, as he played incredibly well for the Indianapolis Colts. He just did. I can't argue it. He played a great game. So did Justin Fields. I've been down on Justin Fields. I'm concerned about Justin Fields. I've knocked Justin Fields. He was on the wheel of quarterback, made fun of Justin Fields, have talked about this passing game for the Jets. No confidence in it. There he is right there. He heard he's been listening. There's Brett in Long Island right now. I've killed Justin Fields. I can't argue. I thought he played an incredible football game. Like, I knew Daniel Jones was capable of playing well. We've seen it. His first game, he threw four touchdown passes against Tampa Bay. Like, I knew he was capable of it. I don't think he's capable of it consistently. I wasn't sure Justin Fields was capable of playing the way he played last week. He was in complete control of the offense. He used his legs. He moved around the pocket, always looking downfield. People are even getting on him for not running on that. I had no problem throwing the ball to Garrett Wilson. You're trying to get further down the field. You're trying to make a play. He had an open receiver, and he put it on him. I have no problem with that final play. I have no problem with him throwing that instead of going to try and run for the first down. I thought he played an excellent. For all the people who say he can't throw and he's not accurate, we had a rough day. We had a rough day. Do I think he's going to do that every week? I don't know. But we had a rough day. For those of us who clamored and yelled all offseason that he can't throw the football, that he's not accurate enough to win in this league, we had a rough day. And for us, anti-Daniel Jones guys, had a rough day. Had a rough day. Russell Wilson sucked. The offense of the New York Giants sucked. Daniel Jones went out and played extremely well. Do I think it's going to be the year of Daniel Jones playing extremely well every week? No, I do not. Do I think he's going to lead the Colts to the playoffs? No, I do not. Do I think ultimately it will be a failure for Daniel Jones in Indianapolis? Yes, I do. But he had one hell of a game. There is no doubt about it. Stuart in Brooklyn. What's up, Stu?
So Daniel Jones had one very good week.
He had one hell of a game, though. You gotta give it to him. He played incredibly well.
He played very well.
He did.
He led us to a victory on the road in Minnesota.
He played great in that game too. He was damn near perfect in that playoff game against Minnesota. Absolutely. Even in my criticism, but I've never taken that away from him. He played an incredible game.
We can't take anything away that he's done good, but he's not being, like you just said, he's not consistent.
I've also been critical of how the Giants handled him. The Giants did a terrible job changing. They gave him Joe Judge. I've never said the Giants didn't have their hand in making Daniel Jones less successful than he could have been. I just don't think Daniel Jones is a quarterback that can I don't think you can consistently win if your franchise's quarterback is Daniel Jones. I don't see him making the playoffs year in and year out. I don't see him winning the Super Bowl. I don't see a franchise being led by Daniel Jones consistently winning.
Yeah, but also, they gave him a defensive coordinator as a coach. And how does that make a quarterback who's on the offensive side of the ball better? They never had a good offensive coordinator with him, did they?
No. He had, what's his name, the first year, and he performed relatively well. Why can't I think of the coach? He's the offensive coordinator in Colorado right now. Why am I drawing a blank on? Pat Shurmur. Pat Shurmur was an offensive coordinator, an offensive coach, and Daniel Jones played well his rookie year. Then they gave him Joe Judge, and it was an absolute disaster. And then Brian Daboll came in, eliminated the turnovers, and he played well enough to complement the run game and the defense to get them to the playoffs. And then in that Minnesota game, he played his ass off. And then we saw what happened against Philadelphia. And yes, the offensive line got blown beat up in that game, but he was atrocious in that game. He was terrible. We'll see. But he played a great game. And I do wish him well. I hope I'm wrong. I hope he has a great career. The dude gave the Giants everything he could have. Like, he tried to come back from injury. He's dealing with neck issues, and he is leading headfirst to try and get into the end zone. Daniel Jones is a good guy. He is a tough son of a gun. He is everything you could want in your franchise player other than being talented enough. But I wish him the best. I hope I'm dead wrong, and I hope he wins a Super Bowl in Indianapolis because he deserves it. He's a good, good dude.
He's a good guy.
Yeah,
I mean, you want to know what? He is a good guy. He played through injuries. How many other guys would just sat down and said, no, I'm hurt? A lot of guys would just sat down and said they were hurt.
I guess. Yeah, I mean, he came back from injuries, definitely. And like I said, dealing with neck injuries and stuff, there was speculation it might cost him his career. I don't know however real that speculation was, but there was speculation he might not play again because of a neck injury. And he's back out there running, diving headfirst, you know, not sliding, taking on contact. He's a tough son of a gun.
He just took it upon himself to go out there and play. He didn't care about maybe it might end my career. No, he just did it. He just did. Get to the Yankees.
Yes.
Let's hope we got to we got minimum two out of three from Detroit.
Oh, minimum. Why? What? We got Houston. We got the Toronto Blue Jays down. Not good enough for you. Now we got to take two out of three from them. Two. Why?
Why? We got to sweep the Red Sox.
And then you got to sweep the Red Sox. Why do they have to sweep
the
Red Sox?
We got to sweep the Red Sox.
Why?
To get back at them. To get back at them.
And if they don't?
Shut them up. To shut them up.
Okay, but set them up for what?
For whatever
what
they
win
this season.
Oh, shut them up.
Shut them up, yes.
Yeah, I don't really, again.
Oh, come on.
We'll shut them up in the playoffs. Who cares about, like, what is shutting them up in September going to do? Win two out of three. That's all. I don't need to sweep the Boston Red Sox. No. Just win two out of three. What's shutting them up going to do? If they sweep them, they still win the season series. Yeah, I'm not. You guys play into that more than I do. I don't really care about shutting up the – win two out of three, beat them in the standings, and then play them in the playoffs. If they lose the wild card series to the Boston Red Sox, you're going to be like, well, at least we shut them up in September. Who cares? And if you beat the Boston Red Sox, who's going to care you lost two out of three in September? Like, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Win two out of three because you want to win the division. Win two out of three because you want to make sure if you play the Boston Red Sox, it's at Yankee Stadium. That's why you need to win two out of three. Not to shut anybody up, not to make some sort of stance, not to make some declarative opinion. The Red Sox have owned the Yankees this season. These three games aren't going to change that, even if they sweep them in Fenway. Even if they sweep them, the Red Sox win the season series. So, like, what's it matter? It matters because I want to play them if they have to at Yankee Stadium. And I want to still try and catch the Blue Jays, and that's still on the table after taking two out of three.